temperature outside is 1 degree Celsius. The local time is 5:46 p.m. For your safety and comfort, please remain seated.
This is the sound of my plane landing in New York, and for a couple of weeks, I'm gonna wake up in the city that never sleeps. I've taken 2 weeks off since I really don't like to rush things when I'm on a vacation. I want to have the time to spend the afternoons in a cafe or a bar reading a novel. So I figure 2 weeks in the Big Apple will let me do that and at the same time leave me enough room to see all the stuff I want to see, eat at the restaurants in Brooklyn and Hell's Kitchen, and visit the bars where I want to drink a glass of wine. Whenever I travel, I like to bring along books that's connected to the place I visit. If I was on a Trans-Siberian train, I'd be reading Dostoevsky as the cold and unfriendly landscape passed by my window. And if I was to go to Cuba, I'd bring along The Old Man and the Sea. But I'm going to New York, and I figure it's an opportunity to read something by an all-time favorite author of mine, Paul Auster. Since I've already read the New York trilogy a couple of times, I choose to go along with the Brooklyn Follies, a novel I know nothing about, but first of all, I figure the title indicates that it takes place in New York. And second, I happen to find a copy of the novel on my brother-in-law's bookshelf a couple of days before my departure. So, here I am. On a plane on my way to New York, and I've seen all the movies that's worth seeing on the personal screen in front of me. I reach into my bag and pull out the novel, excited to see what tricks Mr. Auster will play on me this time. If anyone, this is the man who changed my understanding of literature when I first read City of Glass 10 years ago, and the man who really showed me the different layers of reality and fiction and how it's possible to mix them in separately together when I read The Music of Chance. Imagine my disappointment when I reach page 6 only to discover that the next page is number 21. The borrowed copy is an old discarded one from a library in Copenhagen, and I feel stupid that I didn't bother to check it before I left. Now, there's only about an hour till we land in Newark International Airport, and I have the Observer to pass the time. However, I'm really disappointed since this was the book I wanted to read. Therefore, from the moment I set my feet on Manhattan, the hunt for the Brooklyn Follies begin. So, once I've gotten rid of my jet lag and bought myself a MetroCard, I decide to go to the Village. I've heard that there's a lot of well-equipped second-hand bookstores in this area. And on my way downtown from 57th Street to Washington Square, I'm being entertained by a choir of elderly men in baggy pants and worn-out trench coats. Not your classic barbershop quartet, but nonetheless, I'm a fan. The trip and the jet lag has left me in need of sleep, and the day started late. When I finally reach Greenwich Village, it's already early evening, and I haven't eaten anything since the very mediocre breakfast, lunch, dinner medley on the plane, and even though I have only been to 2 bookstores with no luck, I decide to put off the book hunt until tomorrow and get something to eat instead. I find a nice Italian place in McDougal Street, and while I eat a serving of pasta quattro formaggio and tomato sauce, I wonder why the name McDougal sounds familiar. But it's not until I've finished my espresso and asked for the bill I remember that Bob Dylan used to play a club in this street. I ask the waiter, who tells me that it's a place that used to be called the Gaslight. It's still open, and every night there's live bluegrass, folk, and blues music. So now I know where I'm gonna spend the evening. As I enter 116th MacDougall Street, the sound of a banjo tells me that I've hit the right place. On stage is a five-piece playing instrumental folk music and looking like they're having the time of their life. The crowd is a miniature of New York's diversity. In the back, three very overweight girls in their early 20s are wearing way too little clothes while dancing very explicit with their boyfriends. In a corner, there's five photographers taking pictures of a girl who looks like a model for some fashion magazine. And way up in front of the stage is a man, probably in his late 60s, who's dressed like he's been standing here since 1968. At the bar, I'm served the worst gin and tonic I have ever had. I'm actually not sure if it contains any tonic at all. But as the ice cubes melt and make the liquid drinkable, I'm starting to relax and enjoy the music. At some point, I get in a conversation with this real estate agent from Florida who just turned 70 last week. When she hears I'm from Denmark, she starts a long praise of the Volvo cars, which are among the best she's ever had. However, now she's driving a Mercedes convertible. A woman in her profession has to appear in a certain way. I understand. She's very excited about the music and keeps repeating that it's amazing that you can stop in for a beer someplace and experience music like this. I agree, the band's really something. Towards the end of the set, the guy playing steel guitar dedicates a song to his mother, who flew in all the way from Florida to hear her son play. The real estate woman stands up and takes a bow. I take a sip of my gin.
Could you put a little more tonic in it? It's mainly gin.
In a bookstore in Chelsea the next day, I experience new levels of courtesy. I'm already getting used to the American greetings like how do you do, how are you, what's up? Which is also the way the guy in the bookstore first approaches me. As I walk up and down the aisles, judging the books by the covers, he throws in an extra, "My name's Andrew. Let me know if there's anything I can do." I'm just about to ask him for the book when he adds, "By the way, you have really beautiful eyes. Just thought you should know." Unfortunately, they don't have my book. Now, it's not like I spend all my time running from bookstore to bookstore. I just take a look whenever I pass one, going from one point to another. However, by the fourth day, with still no luck, getting that book begins to mean something more to me. It's not like there's not another novel in my suitcase, and I've seen the first 20 books around town I want to read. I actually bought another one, but it's the Brooklyn Follies I really want to get my hands on. As I'm having dinner at a small vegan place in Brooklyn, it occurs to me that the best place to buy this, by now almost mythical novel, would be at Columbia University, where Auster has been both a student and a teacher. I kind of want to see the place anyway. An hour later, I'm on a Bronx-bound number one line, certain that I'm finally gonna get my book. At Columbia, I head straight for the bookstore.
Isabella Lien, H.G. Adler, Jane Austen, Jane Austen, Paul Auster, City of Glass, Man with Dark, Invincible, The New York Trilogy, Sunset Park, Radio Night.
On the shelf is every book by Auster I've ever heard of, but The Brooklyn Follies.
Yeah, Paul Auster, Brooklyn Follies. It's not on the shelf under Auster, but do you think you have it like somewhere else?
As I ask a clerk to look it up to see if it's in store, I get a sense of what kind of a place Columbia really is.
Did you take a class with him when he was teaching you?
No, unfortunately.
The clerk sends me to an associated bookstore just around the corner where they're supposed to have some used copies of the book.
Yeah, maybe Paul Auster, The Brooklyn Follies. I was in another bookstore, they looked it up. You might have some used copies.
Yeah, say it again. It's Paul Auster.
Paul Auster. Paul Auster.
Okay, and how do you, which title do you want? Sorry.
Brooklyn Follies.
Brooklyn Follies. That's fiction, correct?
Yes.
Yes. You want a used copy?
Well, if it's in okay condition.
Here's one. Sorry, it's all hiding behind this text.
Yeah, sure. I just bought another copy and it was missing from page 6 to page 21, so...
Oh, no.
Yeah, I should have checked it.
If you want to flip through that. I'm sorry the bindings are kind of messed up.
Oh, that's fine. Oh, but this one is in French. that's not gonna be good. Oh, but I think this first one you handed me was nice.
No, that's all right. We are so busy. We were able to get
that's great.
Great.
And this one is in French. So.
Yeah, no, I'll go put that in the French section.
Sure.
Thank you.
Great. I'll pay downstairs here.
Downstairs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, finally, with my book in hand, I step out of the store and walk back to the campus area. Since I'm here, I figure I'll walk around a little and have a look at one of the highest ranking universities in the world.
Columbia University is broken up into about 15 different schools of study. In the undergraduate level, there's the School of Engineering, which is abbreviated...
This is Linda. She's a law school student at Columbia, and she's agreed to show me around a little and tell me about the place. At first, it feels like an official tour as she shows me the different buildings and explain which president had them built when, and tell me about some of the traditions associated with the places. I'm explained that every student has to complete a swim test before graduating from the university. The reason is an old emergency plan for evacuation. Apparently, the plan is that all students should escape by swimming across the Hudson River. Linda tells me that the only students excused are the engineers who supposedly would be able to just build a bridge across the river in a case of emergency.
so I can't say that officially, but people do it. Not always sober, but they do it.
Is it in use now, this building?
It is. Right now it's the I can't say it in French, but the French mansion is what they call it in French.
Okay.
As she tells me about her life as a student at Columbia, in her dorm, and in New York City, I really begin to feel the spirit of an old institution of knowledge in the center of the world. And I think that this might be a place where I would be very happy.
I'm a film student, and I want to make like a combination of visual journalism and...
Okay. Well, we'll be passing our visual arts building momentarily here. But if you have any questions, the floor below us houses the admissions office.
I say goodbye to Linda and thank her for her company. She has to attend a class, and I want to find the nearest cafe, order a big cup of black coffee, and read the first chapter of the book I hold in my pocket. And as I'm standing on the stairs, looking at the main building of Columbia one last time, a feeling begins to take a hold on me. Maybe it's the warmth of the sun and the sense of early springtime. Or maybe it's all the voices of the students sitting on the stairs drinking coffee, talking to each other, or preparing for the next lecture. But suddenly I realize that everything is possible.